Now, there's a very strong relationship to the Sufis of Islam and to the mystics of the Orient in all of this. Exactly at this time in Spain, just over the border from the Provençal court in Sicily and in the Near East, there was the great Sufi movement of the mysticism of Islam, very powerfully influenced by that of India. Also, we can look at India at this time. It's the most remarkable thing. Exactly at this period was the flowering of the great erotic mystical cult of India. The great poem in celebration of this, the Gita Govinda of Jayadeva, the song of the cowherd, celebrating the love of Krishna for Radha, Radha Krishna, the love of the god Krishna for the woman Radha. That poem was written about 1172, almost the same date as the Tristan stories. And in the Fujiwara court of Kyoto, the love theme in the aristocratic circles was associated with cosmic love. In the Oriental love, however, the woman becomes the vessel of a supernatural power, of a transcendent energy and so forth, whereas in the European cult, she is adored for herself, not as symbolic of anything. Furthermore, in the Orient, the woman was very often of inferior caste, not in Japan, but in India and in the Sufi world. And it was exactly that loss of contact with the social order, which represented the plunge into the divine sacred sphere, which is beyond social norms. Often a woman of low degree. Not so in the European sphere. The woman was for herself honored, and she was usually of at least as high a station as the poet or the worshiper. Now, all of these loves are adulterous. It is absolutely basic to courtly love, as it was to the love in India and Sufism and Japan, that it should be adulterous. The little courts that grew up, called the courts of love, actually of high ladies who made decisions and cases that would be brought to them, made decisions on this basis. For example, there's one account of a young man who declared that the lady of his address was bound to accept him because she had told him formally that she already had a lover, but that when this lover was no longer her lover, he would be next on her list. Well, he said, she has now married that man, so here I am. And the court decided absolutely that since love is incompatible with marriage, she cannot be said to be in love with her husband, and this lover is eligible. Here you get this idea of the challenge of love to the impersonal sacrament. Marriage was regarded as a violation of love, and when you think of the Provençal word for love and the Latin word for love, amor, spell it backwards, you get Roma. Rome was regarded as representing that principle which is the exact opposite to love, and love was the higher principle. Now, it's against this that Wolfram comes. This seemed to him to be an inadequate solution of the problem. The tension was not to be endured between the socially accepted and the actual experience of love. And so in the Grail romance, his hero is going to represent, his hero and heroine, the refutation, you might say, both of the ecclesiastical and of the troubadour approaches. Now, the Minnesingers of Germany received the tradition of love from the troubadours. They are of a slightly later generation, just slightly later. But as always in the German sphere, they found a depth in it that the French had failed to recognize. They recognized that this power of Amor was a divine power, that it wasn't simply a secular thing at all, but it had the compulsion of the goddess Venus. And the word Minne in German is a reference to this kind of love. It means love. And Minne Sänger means the singers of love. And the greatest of these was Walter von der Vogelweide, a delightful figure, really, whose poetry is simply delicious. And he speaks of the goddess Minne in her power, in her majesty. And you're on the brink here of a religion of love. This religion of love was actually rendered, I would say, in the Tristan of Gottfried of Strasbourg. Gottfried's poem is not complete. He died, we don't know why, 1210. Here, the potion that is drunk by Tristan and Isolde represents the breakthrough of compulsive love. You all know the Tristan story, how he was wounded by the uncle of Isolde, whose sword was poisoned by poison fabricated by Isolde's mother. And the only cure for this poisoned wound could be derived from the woman who had fashioned the poison. And Tristan, by device, finds himself in the court of Isolde's mother, whose name also is Isolde, in Ireland, and is cured. And he becomes the teacher of Isolde, and is so, what can we say, fascinated by her, that when he goes back home, he does nothing except sing the praise of Isolde. And he recommends her to his uncle, Mark, the king, the bachelor king, as a proper queen. Now look what you have here. You have a person utterly in love who hasn't recognized love. This is the real fault of Tristan and Isolde. She was in love too, only didn't know it. Then he's sent back to get Isolde, and on the way to King Mark, they drink, by accident, what they think is wine, and the compulsive takeover of love, this occurs. Then they are torn between two virtues, the virtue of love and the virtue of honor, which are in collision here. Well, that's the situation when Wolfram turns to the Grail romance.